Wieder live von Ihrem Toyota-Partner mit diesem Leasing-Auftakt. Der neue Toyota Yaris-Hybrid. Ab 179 Euro im Monat. Ohne Anzahlung. Seine Sicherheitsassistenten laufen mit. Und ja, ab ins Netz mit voller Konnektivität. Auch am Start die Toyota Team Deutschland Sondermodelle. Ohne Anzahlung geht's in die nächste Runde. Jetzt los sprinten zu Ihrem Toyota-Partner.
Hackmans MMA-Show. Mit Sebastian Hacke. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Hallo da draußen und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Hackmans MMA Show. Und heute gibt es ein englischsprachiges Interview. Es sind zwar zwei Deutsche mit dabei, denn Olli Kopp ist auch mit in der Leitung. Olli, hallo erstmal.
Grüß dich Sebastian, wie geht's dir?
Mir geht's sehr gut, mein Freund. Aber wir werden gleich Ant Evans begrüßen. Und er ist zum Beispiel der ehemalige PR-Chef bei der UFC gewesen und hat mit Sicherheit einige interessante Geschichten und Anekdoten zu bieten. Olli, du kennst ihn ja schon sehr lange, ne?
Wir kennen uns seitdem er angefangen hat bei der UFC und sind inzwischen also wirklich sehr, sehr eng befreundet und auch seit vielen Jahren schon. Ich kenne wirklich niemanden im MMA-Bereich, der so gut darin ist, Geschichten zu erzählen und sich Möglichkeiten zu überlegen, wie Fighter ihre Persönlichkeit besser in der Presse rüberbringen können. Ohne ihn hätte es diese ganze Welle von Stars aus England und europäischen Ländern in dieser Form so nicht gegeben. Also die hätten nicht dieses Profil bekommen. Er hat immer dafür gesorgt, dass die möglichst viel Presse kriegen und dass sie auch wussten, Punkt eins, dass die Presse wusste, welche Fragen sie stellen soll. Das macht ja auch nicht jeder PR-Mensch. Und das andere ist, die Fighter auch ein Stück weit gebrieft hat, was denn für, sagen wir mal, diesen Medienpartner wichtig ist und worauf man den Fokus legen sollte. Also dieses Coaching war so immer seins und man merkt halt, dass er da einfach aufgeht drin. Also super interessanter Gesprächspartner und das werden wir jetzt garantiert dann auch bald sehen.
Er hat auch das Buch von Michael Bisping geschrieben, zusammen mit Michael Bisping. Er kennt Dan Hardy sehr gut. Er wird mit Sicherheit über verrückte Charaktere reden wie Sakuraba, Rampage Jackson und so weiter und so fort. Aber wir wollen gar nicht spoilern hier. Also, ohne weitere Umschweife, hier ist das Interview mit Ant Evans, dem ehemaligen UFC-PR-Chef, in englischer Sprache bei Hackmans MMA-Show auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-TV.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Joining me at this time is my good friend Oliver Kopp. And Oliver is not alone. He brought a friend. And Evans is also here today. Welcome to Hackmans MMA Show.
Great to be here, man. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time. How's life treating you in Las Vegas?
Very well. And, you know, you've introduced me as, you know, Oliver's friend. I'm actually his sponsor. So
it's his sponsor. Okay, I see. Oliver, is any truth to that?
100% true. Like, I would have never worked in MMA without Ant's help.
Cool. Ant, you had a 12-year career with the UFC and you had several positions within the company. I've done my research. For example, you were the first hire for the newly opened UFC UK office in London of 2007, I think that must have been. Must have been a highlight, right? To be the first guy in front of the line.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. I wonder where you got that from. I worked in the UFC for 12 years, starting off in the UK office when that opened up in late 2006, early 2007. That's where I know the O-Cop from. And then, yeah, Then I moved to the United States, where still here now, and became head of PR there. So yeah, I was with UFC for a long time. I was definitely there longer than most offices of the company.
Michael Bisping and Dan Hardy were emerging stars back then. That's how I would phrase it. What was your impression of these young studs back then?
Yeah, and thank goodness they were, because they made me look like a genius. but it doesn't take a genius to get a lot of good PR. And Michael Bisping and Dan Hardy, you know, two like charismatic guys who, you know, understand that it's not a chore to be asked to do, you know, television and radio shows. So yeah, thank God they came along at right around the time I was hired. I mean, Michael had already won the Ultimate Fighter, and I knew him a little bit. With Dan Hardy, though, I wouldn't say I was instrumental in getting him into the UFC, but I was definitely banging the drum to Joe Silva. It's like, can you please, you know, we've just got Michael Bisping, you know, and a bunch of, you know, guys from the Wolf's Lair. Can you please see your way to offering Dan Hardy a contract? Dan Hardy. Yeah, I mean, look, you couldn't, you know, it's that's like having the Rock and Austin, you know, you know, at the same time, you couldn't ask for a better pair to work with. In terms of impressions, yeah, I mean, look, they both of those guys are exactly who they are on TV. I mean, Mike's one of my best friends. I mean, actually, I did his autobiography with him. You know, actually spoke to him yesterday. You know, we're real tight friends. But as well as I know him, I've never quite worked out with Mike if it's that he can't control himself, or rather that he doesn't want to control himself. And I'm still not sure which one it is with him. And it could be either or both. And it could be some occasions he can't, and sometimes he doesn't want to. But, you know, it's definitely fun working with Mike. Especially when he decides that once we were in Ireland doing promoting UFC 72, he wasn't on the card, but again, he was like basically my one star to take to the media there. And he decided that we were going to stay in Ireland. And I'm like, all right, I guess. I was like, but we remember tomorrow o'clock, 7 a.m., we've got to do, I've got us on BBC Radio. You've got to do this BBC Radio interview. You know, BBC Radio just hasn't touched UFC yet. We've got to be ready for that. It's like, he goes, oh, no, we'll be all right. And then we went out drinking.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, till like, you know, like 1 a.m. is here. I'm like, okay, the bar's shutting, Mike. Let's, you know, let's go back to the hotel. The hotel we haven't even checked into yet, because we were supposed to be there for a day, so we have like no change of clothes, nothing. But I booked a hotel over the phone. The night's not over yet. And then he's just one of those people that in any town he finds himself in, he just has a sixth sense for the bars that are open the latest, or the bars that will stay open even though they shouldn't. He goes, oh, let's go over here. So we're in another bar till like 2-3 a.m. and they kick us out. He goes, the night's not over yet. I'm like, Mike, 7 a.m. the radio, please. It's, you know, I basically begged, screamed and threatened to get us on this show. Please, can we just go to sleep and, you know, wake up somewhat coherent,
not,
you know,
hungover.
This interview that's in 4 hours time, Michael, the night's not over yet. And then it was come to a point where we finally get thrown out of this bar, and I've stopped drinking, you know, someone's got to have some sense. And he's the night's not over yet. And I was like, Michael, look at the sky, you see that round thing that's kind of warm and light? That's the sun. That means that in fact the night is over. Anyway, so we roll in at like 6 o'clock to this hotel room we've now got to check out in 4 hours. And not only does he go to sleep, which I knew he would, not only is he not answer his door, which I knew he would, I have a key. I think I've outsmarted him, because he does this a lot. Well, he did this a lot. He's way more professional than he used to be. Aren't we all now? We're old and boring. But I've got a key to his room in one of those cards. So I hit it and I'm getting the green light, but it won't open. He's barricaded. so I can't get in. And I'm like, Michael, you know how important this interview is to me. Come on, please, 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 please. He won't answer. I finally push my way in. He's barricaded the thing. He's in bed, fully clothed still. And he evidently couldn't figure out how to get into bed. So he's laying on the top of it and done this kind of crocodile roll to get some sheets over him. So he's like a human, like a drunk human burrito on this bed. And I'm like, Mike, wake up. Like he's trying to curse at me, but it's they aren't curse words. They're just, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. It's 7 o'clock. So what do I do? What do you do in that situation?
I don't know. I've never been in such a situation.
Well, I tell you, if you're a hack like me, what you do is you call up, you pretend to be Michael Bisping, and you do the interview. That's what you do. That's what I did.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Oh my God.
Yes, I did. I was just so desperate because, like, this is like nobody would. This is like nobody would cover the UFC now. Now you used to seeing UFC on BBC, you know, on ESPN, you know, on the major, you know, nobody covered it. And if they did cover it, it'd be like human cockfighting from America is here in the UK to, you know, infest our children with horrible, you know, violence. You know, I think that was a direct headline once. But yeah, I could not let this go. So I think, you know what, we're from the same part of England. I kind of know what he would say. So yeah, I did the interview as him.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What did Marshall say?
Oh, Marshall was horrified. Marshall Zelaznik, who was the head of the UFC in the UK, was just horrified. And he goes, you're a lunatic. You're a lunatic. Dana thought it was great. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I felt so bad about it after it was done. It's just like a moment of madness. Like, why did I do that? Why did I think that was okay? So I saw Dana a few days later, and I fessed up. And Dana went kind of quiet. Then he looked at me hard, and I was like, "That is the best effing idea I've ever heard." He goes, "That could be the future of PR." He goes, "We won't have to try and get Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz to do anything. We'll just hire voice actors, stick them in a room, and get them to do interviews all day long." He goes, "This is the future of UFC PR. This is great."
Oh my God. This is a crazy story. This is a crazy story. I mean, we will talk about Michael later because you guys wrote a book together, of course. Mm-hmm. My favorite martial arts book ever. It's amazing. Dan Hardy. It's just the truth. It's just a fact. That's not a compliment. I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, his story is incredible by itself, but we'll talk about that later. I mean, you mentioned Dan Hardy, and he got fired by the UFC recently. I liked him a lot as a commentator, but after the Herb Dean incident where he climbed the fence and then this incident with another UFC employee backstage, they decided to get rid of him. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I don't think he climbed a fence. I mean, he definitely had an argument with Herb Dean.
Yeah, I mean, which was discussed in MMA circles and it caused big waves. But then I think this other situation with the female UFC employee backstage broke the camel's back. And what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I know who the employee is. She's super talented. Actually, does my old job. She's head of PR, and she actually does things that weren't part of my job back then. Her name's Vicky. She's fantastic. So, yeah, I like them both. I mean, I think it was I think as Dan said, it was unfortunate they had a disagreement, as you do, you know, with colleagues from time to time. It was unfortunate that he chose to do that publicly. You know, not publicly, but you know, in front of media, which, you know, I think was the whole
Could be seen as unprofessional.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think you know, I only know that from reading Dan's statement on it. I mean, Dan's definitely very opinionated. You know, he's definitely has an elevated opinion of himself. You know, like all fighters have to, because
Well, but that's a good point, because I read his book recently, and he's an excellent analyst, and I like his opinions, but he has a high opinion of himself, and that's sometimes detrimental, I think.
I think all fighters have to have a high opinion of themselves, because it's, you know, when they go up against somebody who's knocking, you know, like he fought George St. Pierre, know, beats everybody up, he roughs them up, he takes them down, and nobody can do anything about it. Yeah, but that won't happen to me. Mm. That's what a fighter is.
Being yeah, but he still thinks that he could have won that fight, and I heavily disagree.
Yes, well, that's... But you are looking at it as an objective individual. Fighters are not objective individuals. They have to... they have to force themselves, and this is what, you know... I've spoken to a lot of fighters about this, and you can only get honest answers usually out of retired fighters on this, like if they were scared, if they were intimidated. While they're fighting, they have to have brainwashed themselves into thinking, yeah, I know this guy. I mean, think of fighting Francis Ngannou. If you fought for too long on what's going to happen when he hits you with those shots of his, you would say, you know what, nah, I'll fight someone else. So what they have to do is convince themselves that that will not happen to them because they're special. They're the one.
Yeah, that's
all
a
of
good
them
point.
Have to do that. So asking, and that's the thing with, you know, this thing we have these days when we every critic, everyone on TV, every commentator has to be an ex-fighter. Well, you got a bunch of ex-fighters. They're not going to behave like someone who comes from a professional broadcast background. They're not going to behave like that. Mm. So I don't think you should be surprised from time to time when they do things like the kind of abnormal, special people, and I mean that in the best possible way, that they are. I mean, look, with Dan, I mean, obviously, I love his analysis. I think he's a really good commentator.
He also seems like a good guy. I mean, but yeah. Like I said, he has a high opinion of himself, and he portrays that, and that can cause trouble in media circles.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC's fired a lot of people. I mean, you know, they fired me. so, you know, that's what it does. You know, pretty much everyone used to work at the UFC and doesn't, you know, was fired. So, look, it happens. I mean, it's just obviously Dan's got this groundswell of, you know, of a fan base. You know,
rightfully so. I mean, he was a good fighter. He's an even better announcer, even better analyst in my book. And yeah, I wish him all the best. I would like to see him back and learn from his mistakes. I think, like you said, if you're if you've never done anything else but fighting, you have to grow into these positions. I mean, I've been a commentator for over 10 years now, and it took me some learning. It takes years and years, and you make your mistakes. And yeah, we're not machines, we're humans, and I'd like to see him back at some point. But you mentioned another good thing, the Wolf's Lair camp. Rampage Jackson was training there for quite some time. Did you meet him?
Oh, yeah, I know Rampage real well, yeah.
Oh, he seems like such a character.
He's certainly that. He's definitely that, yes.
Any Rampage Jackson stories? Please, I'm begging you.
Oh, a lot. Yeah, I mean, he was a ton of fun to work with. I got a reputation at the UFC as being the asshole whisperer. The problem, anyone who was a problem child, who actually, they thought Bisping was a problem child, he really... really isn't. I find him very easy to work with. You know, I just kind of accept. You have to accept these guys as, if you come in thinking these guys are normal people, like they're swimmers or golfers, you're gonna have issues. You're gonna not understand the way they act.
Of course.
You know? And it goes from little things like I remember. I think, was it you? One, I can't remember which UFC it was, but it was one of the ones in Toronto. And actually, it was whichever one it was where Bisping fought, I think, Brian Stann, and they had the flyweight title. But they had the press conference in this really nice, you know, hotel. And the press conference was on the Thursday. So obviously,
UFC
they're all
152, I guess.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, you know, I was basically there to help the Canadian team. We're all like super professional, you know, great guys. But there was a little thing where they had to walk the fighters through the kitchen to get to the backstage area. And you don't walk fighters who were starving themselves at that point and who were already miserable, weight drained, pissed off, through a kitchen.
Sounds,
you know,
logic.
You just don't do that, you know. And they're all in a mood then. you just don't do that. So yeah, with Rampage, I mean, he was supposed to be like, you know, an asshole. I always got, you know, I think with these guys, the Diaz brothers, you know, if you sit down with them saying, hey, Luke, we want you to do this and this, what do you want to do? You know, is there anything here on this list of things either too early, too late? You don't like talking to that guy. You wish it was tape, not live. Any of that stuff. I mean, with the Diaz guys, you know, Nick basically told me, I sat down with him, he's like, hey, people don't get this, but I'm shy. I was like, really? Oh, okay. He goes, could I do these like one-on-one? He goes, I'll give him like, you know, we can do 20 minutes each person, but I don't want to be sat on a table with like 10 guys all asking me questions. It's kind of weirds me out. Can I just do, it was like me and you talking, now I can do that instead. So I'm like, of course, Nick, yes, we can do that. And I think sometimes that's the real secret of PR, is just getting to know the people you're promoting,
right?
You know, and also getting to know the people you're pitching to. I know, you know, when I have an idea, because I know, I'm like, know what Kevin Ioli would like to write about. And I thought, oh, you know what? That's actually Ariel Helwani would love to get his teeth into this. Or this is a Dave Meltzer story for sure.
And this is honestly the thing that I want to say about you, Ant. You are the best storyteller I've ever met in MMA. You had an idea for everybody. You managed to give people a personality who had very little personality, even, and help make them stars. And I always admired that. You always gave 150% to people, even when they weren't appreciative of it. And I think it shows in the results.
I appreciate that, man. I mean, I don't think anyone, you know, be it Dana White, Vince McMahon, you know, anyone can make someone a star if they don't have it in them. But, you know, I think it's taking the time to get to know who they are and saying, okay, well, this is the interesting part about this person, you know, and there's no better technique to getting to interview people and get to know them than the four-year-old method, which is just keep asking why'd you do that? Why? Well, how did that make you feel? And then you get to know them, okay, I know something about this person. That's an interesting story. That's relatable. And then you got to do. Then you work on the other side of it, which is like, who would like to? First, you have to think. Well, is that a visual story to tell, or is it that's a written piece? You know, if well, okay, it's visual. Okay, well then you're down to a list of like Ariel Helwani and a bunch of others. Like with Conor McGregor, before he really blew up, I had Conor walk from the hotel with Ariel Helwani to the O2 Arena in Dublin and sit in the seats where Conor sat at UFC 93 when he was a kid. He bought his own ticket and he went to see the first UFC now.
Wow.
Now he's gone back and he's headlining. So they sat in the seats. Or his, wink, wink, we did a little bit of pro wrestling license there. It was in the same section. Who knows if it were the same two seats or not, you know. But
it doesn't matter. But it's... The whole thing is the whole circle idea, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And there he's looking at the empty arena. We're talking, Ariel was like, I sat here, you know, freaking out that I want to do that. And now they've already set up this thing, and it's a show I've sold out, I've headlined, you know?
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah. I mean, that is like, you know, definitely think that's a talent I have, something, because you do what you, I think it makes most of, like anybody, I'm good at the things I like doing, or maybe it's I like doing the stuff I'm good at, and that's one of the things I've always, you know, had an affinity for is that type of storytelling.
You're also very good at stirring up shit.
Well, that's more a hobby than a professional thing.
No, but seriously, I mean, look at the whole Dan Hardy, Marcus Davis thing, the Plastic Patty thing. You can't tell me that you didn't have your fingerprints all over that.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot of fun. yes, that was obviously UFC 99. Was that?
That was 99.
Was that it? Was that in Cologne?
Yes.
That was the first show in Germany. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a ton of fun. You know. That was the closest I ever got to being a pro wrestling booker.
It's true though. I mean, look at the results. No other UFC fight has ever done better ratings than that fight in Germany.
Amazing.
Not a fact. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, it was also the opening fight of UFC 99, and was the first time that the UFC was shown live on DSF on sports.
Oh, just edit that part out. Just go with I did it. Just yeah. We'll ignore that.
I mean, how did you discover the UFC? Were you always an MMA fan, or did they discover you?
Like a lot of people my age, I was, you know, into martial arts, you know, watch all the ninja films and stuff like that. You know, very similar to, that's probably why I get on with Dan Hardy and Bisping so much. They had the same stuff, you know, they were training martial arts, you know, looking for something that was a real martial art, you know, not a, you know, a phony one. And I went from a gas station and tell how long I've been, I didn't call it a petrol station, tell how long I've been in America now, but I hired a video of UFC 1. And we put it in, and I was like, holy shit, I think this is real. I think this is real fight. Because I thought it was a pro wrestling cage matches. I thought it was like, you know, something like an NWA cage match stuff. I think this is real. And then I went back and they already had UFC 2. So I got that. And then I was like hooked. And it was, you know, I was one of the guys who would have to pay $70 to get a NTSC videotape sent from America to England. And then I'd have to pay someone else to convert it to, you know, PAL or whatever it is they have in the UK, so I can watch it grainy and track it, and you know,
bad all quality.
Rolly. You guys are all wrestling fans. You know,
tape trading was real back then. Yeah. How did you meet Oliver? I mean, the two of you have an interesting chemistry.
Oliver knows. Yeah. you do know, don't you? You were there too. I was hired by the UFC because I was a boxing writer. Then I was sick of basically making no money, and I thought, well, there's more money in doing the opposite. I'm good at identifying stories and pitching them. What if I don't write them? Then I can have more time to more pitching, and that's a PR job. I'll pitch it, develop a story, pitch it somebody else to write on behalf of someone who's paying me. And so I was doing that in boxing, and then I heard the UFC's opening UK office. And luckily I knew a few people in the UFC, like Tom Gebasi, who to this day runs UFC.com editorial. I knew Mark Ratner at the UFC. So they basically set a meeting up with me and Marshall. And I had a very, very thick Northern English accent at the time. So I went in to meet Marshall Zelaznik, who was American. Spoke to him in the 40 minutes, and I walked out, and I actually texted my girlfriend at the time. It's like, yeah, interview went great. I think I nailed it. Marshall actually turned around to somebody else who was in the meeting and said, I didn't understand one word that guy just said, but he sounds really confident. We should probably hire him. And so I was doing PR for the UFC in the UK, and that's obviously Oliver. I think you either writing for or you won't. I'm never quite sure what the relationship was there, Ollie, but you're involved with Fighters Only magazine. And that's how I know Oliver.
Oh, well, interesting story. I mean,
kind of connected over our shared love of good stories, I want to say.
Yeah.
But isn't that the most important
thing? And also,
I felt
bad for you because the first time I really noticed you was when you were, when Michael Bisping was just giving you an absolute ear bashing. After you know UFC 75.
Elaborate on that.
Oh my god.
Oh,
well, you go ahead.
I've already been talking to you. You go ahead. I want to see what your recollection is.
Ollie, it's your turn.
It was you getting the ear bashing. I was just stood there like watching a massacre.
Well, the backstory was Michael Bisping fought Matt Hamill at the O2 in London at UFC 75.
Remember that.
And exactly. And let's just say the decision wasn't as clear-cut as Mike made it out to be in his interview afterwards. I wasn't aware of their personal issues at the time, so I didn't really understand why he put Hamill down the way he did in the interview afterwards, like saying, okay, now it's bye-bye, it's back to wrestling for you. So when the press conference started, I asked Mike, do you really think you won that fight? And all bets were off after that, so...
He didn't like that?
Tell me, a cheeky bastard? something like that. But yeah,
it was exactly that. It wasn't like that. That's exactly word for word what he called you.
It kind of got a little ugly, and Marshall had to step in, and he said, well, next question. So I kind of figured, okay, I'm done with the UFC now. But the man that Ant said helped him in a way, and that he knew in a way, Mark Ratner, really stepped up to fix this thing for me. And he was instrumental in me being able to do UFC commentary after that.
Okay.
I really thought I was done at that point. And Mike and I kind of made up at the next UFC show up in Newcastle.
Yeah.
But he did make it hard for me.
Well,
I went up to him and said, hey, man, I'm sorry. Kind of things kind of got away with me. He's like, you're sorry for what, mate? I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry for having questioned you. Now you're sorry for what, mate? I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry for having questioned you about what you said about Matt Howell afterwards. He was like, no, you're sorry for having insulted me. That's what you're sorry for. Like, all right.
Well, then.
That was the end of it. But you probably have more of a recollection of how it looked for everybody else. I mean, I was kind of in the zone at that moment.
Yeah, I know, when we talk about the book, that was a real... that's still hard. That whole night is still hard for Michael to talk to him. And the only argument we had, and it was a blazing argument, like past midnight. And it was about that night and that part of his career, which was a really bumpy road time in his career. And you know, I can go into that, what was in the book and some of the things we left out of the book just for space, which you know, can give a little bit more. But essentially, at that point, Michael was a bear that not only had a splinter in each paw, but had also been tasered and was just you could have asked that question six ways from Sunday, and it still would have set him off. At that point, and if it wasn't you, it would have been the next guy. It wasn't that guy, it would have been the guy after that. But yeah, you were just in the, and it took him a long time to realize just how he looked on that night, which is why it was so hard for him to, you know, he wanted to skip this whole part in the book. He wanted to skip it. He didn't want to discuss it. He didn't want to talk about it because he knows, you know, the way he acted was not kosher. But that's part of doing autobiography. You show your best side and your worst sides. It's, you know, it's good, you know. That was definitely not one of the best nights of his life.
We're going to talk about the biography soon, but one other question. You also played a big role in the introduction of what we know as UFC Fight Pass now, and OTT platforms are huge these days, of course, mm-hmm. but how was it back then, and what was your role in the UFC developing their own over-the-top content platform?
Well, developing very little. I mean, there are, you know, people with actual real skills who are really smart need to do develop. I mean, it was actually Marshall Zelaznik who actually was my boss in the UK. He got called back to the head office. And one of the, he did basically, I mean, a lot of the UFC's success right now, you know, which enabled the, you know, the 4. Whatever it was, $1 billion sale to WWE was due to Marshall Zelaznik. He's like the great unsung hero of UFC's develop in the Zuffa era. He was absolutely instrumental in the expansion in Europe, you know, all the TV deals around the world, the expansion into Brazil, Australia, Canada, that was all Marshall Zelaznik.
Wow.
But he also launched Fight Pass. So that basically comes from, you know, this is a cool thing, you know, working at the UFC, and this comes from Dana. I mean, Dana, I know it's cool now to, you know, not give Dana any credit for anything ever. You know, it's definitely, and he wouldn't give a hoot about it, but Dana White is a pretty extraordinary guy to work for. Like he works all the time himself, you know, full blast. And you kind of pick up on that. I mean, he's the kind of guy who thinks anything's possible if you just attack it, you know?
Well, which is sometimes true.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, I mean, always like describing like a great white shark, you know, a great white shark has to go forward, forward, forward. It can't stop or it drowns. You know, Dana's like that. If you give him a month off, I think, you know, when people said to me like, oh, Dana, you got all this money, why don't you retire? And that, it's like, he he cannot do that. It's, he is not built. That's not in his DNA. He can't do that. but I think Dane and Lorenzo were like, okay, we need 10 more shows a year because we need to do more in the UK. We need to do more in Brazil. And I think we need to do some in China, Australia. I think Fox says they'll take them, but they won't pay for them. But that's not an option. We'll just put them on UFC.com and some sort of subscription. And I think Marsha was like, okay, well, you know, the DVD business is kind of like dipping now. Why don't we just digitize all that? And they have 10 shows a year, plus they get access to all the UFC DVDs digitally.
The library.
Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, let's do all the Pride library, and let's do the WEC, let's do the WFA and that. And then, you know, then it got rolling, and then it became a big thing. And then it was like, okay, what else can we have? We need more live shows. Let's do the prelims. Let's take them off Facebook and put them on Fight Pass. Was it, you know? And then it got rolling. And then Marshall, unfortunately, was one of the, along with Jamie Pollock, who was also instrumental in all this. A lot of people like that got let go in the big, you know, call of 2016 when WME bought the company. It was really the death of what I consider the UFC that I worked for. That was really the end of it. Everything started to kind of change then.
Intriguing.
Yeah, and the culture started to change. I think that, you know, the relationship with the fans started to change a little bit. You know, I think that's when UFC ceased to be like the underdog, the renegade underdog, you know, kind of like the cool band that is so cool, it's got a big following and it can sell out an arena. That's when it jumped to being mainstream sellout stadiums, you know, which is great because you always wish your favorite band success. But there's a part of you that wishes, you know what, I like being able to go to see the band in a dive bar. You know, and getting close to them. You know, it loses some of that cool factor, I think. And you know, you can't be uber successful and a renegade. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, the personality gets lost a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, with Fight Pass, when and after Marshall went, I worked with a guy called Eric Winter for a year who was really good. And then they fired him, and then it was like, okay, until we can find somebody else, you'll run it. And I was like, me and a guy called Stephen Tetchy actually ran it. Yeah, they give me a pretty big budget to bring in new stuff. The coolest one I saw was, you know, being a big early MMA mark, you know, to have Kazushi Sakuraba pay you a visit and pitch you a concept he'd worked on.
Nice.
You guys are wrestling fans. I know a lot of people who listen to your show are wrestling fans. It was basically Survivor Series, but with real submission grappling.
But for those who don't know it, it's like team matches. It's four or five members on each team, and they fight each other until one team doesn't have any members left. So just for those who don't watch professional wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's team submission grappling. So you have teams I just wanted to
explain the professional wrestling side of it. And
yes,
so it's called Quintet, five members of a submission grappling squad against five members of another squad, and they fight each other, which is very, very interesting. And I love watching it, actually, because
it's awesome.
Submission grappling can be boring sometimes, but if you mix in the team component, and if you mix in the factor of, man, who do we get in first, who is the biggest cardio, who can submit guys, it becomes way more intriguing, and it has a its own dynamic. Yeah,
so I did cool things like that. I added that to Fight Pass, and you know, a few other cool things. Everyone thought I was nuts, and they thought Dana would go berserk, but I added left way. And people who don't know, that is a traditional Burmese martial art.
Crazy.
Sorry?
It's crazy. Headbutts are allowed. It's crazy to watch. It's so pure and so aggressive. It's like a car accident. Sometimes you don't want to watch it, but you can't turn your eyes off it. So
Yeah. So they're like, if you signed this bare knuckle stuff, I was like, no, I haven't signed bare knuckle boxing. Dana don't like it. He's like, well, what's this? I was like, well, that's bare knuckle boxing with punches, kicks, knees, elbows, and headbutts. That's different.
Well then. Oh my God.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. And I actually said, I can't even say the exec I was talking to, I was like, you need to check your white privilege. I was like, this is a traditional martial art from the small but proud nation of Burma. How dare you come in here and say this isn't a real martial art? It's been going for 800 years, young. You know,
but anyway,
I showed Dana off it. He goes, this is awesome. Can we get it? I was like, yeah, I've already signed it, dude. He's like, oh, great. So he didn't give a hoot.
And it was great.
Literally. It's great.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm crying over here. The UFC went through several phases, as you said a couple of minutes ago. I mean, throughout the past 25 years and even more. Which one was your favorite phase?
I know. I mean, I'm like, look, I just turned 44, which is, you know, which is middle age, any way you cut it. And I'm probably turning one of those people like, oh, it was so much better in my day. But I really did love, you know, the first 4 or 5 years I was at the UFC, because it was, there was definitely a sense, not just within the company, but I think the fans were absolutely lockstep with the UFC at the time. Is like, this is the greatest sport ever. We're effing right. The rest of the world is effing wrong. And we're going to show you. And, you know, and there's, you know, we were like, we are going to prove everybody wrong. We are going to prove everyone wrong. We're going to keep pushing and pushing. This is just the coolest stuff ever, you know. And, you know, you can't, like, you know, you said, mention, you know, Rampage, Cheeto Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, you know. And I'm looking, I know, I just can't get that excited for, like, you know, as excited for, you know, is Israel Adesanya, who is clearly, you know, he's good, he's talented, you know, he's nowhere near as good as he thinks and people want him to be. He's nowhere near that good. But I'm like, well, you're like the production line model of Anderson Silva, mixed in with some of Dan Hardy's smack talking. You know, I saw the originals. I saw the rough energy originals. You know, you guys are just kind of like derivatives of this. You know, but there are still some original. Like Khabib is a completely different character. Completely different character. You know,
he's Francis a different McGarno. Breed.
We've never seen anything like him in MMA before. You know, with just this just terrifying, mortifying punching power at heavyweight. We've never seen that before. You know, so I get excited about that sort of stuff. But, you know, when you're talking about the Rampages and you know, and the Randy Couture's and the Chuck Liddell's, and just how renegade it was. You know, almost to the point of being, you know, I wouldn't say unprofessional, but, you know, when I was at the UFC and when I loved it the most, you know, everyone was in jeans and t-shirts. Everyone,
edgy.
You know, partied. You know, we were partied like, you know, look, I'm just like a mid-level guy, you know, who just happens to have a good affinity with fighters. And, you know, I was, you know, we were going to like bars and shutting them down, you know, going to strip clubs and shutting them down. It was like a ton of fun. And it's not the kind of fun that I get up to now. I'm a married man and, you know, I have a 7-year-old son. But at the time, I really thought it was quite fantastic, you know.
Living the rockstar life.
Yeah, I mean, that was my favorite. That was having the most fun.
That's about 2007 to 2011-ish, right?
Yeah, that exactly around that. Yeah, exactly
okay.
around that.
Okay.
You know, and there's, you know, there's a whole feeling around it. Like, you know, even the media, you know, like they could see like, oh God, you know, this is getting bigger. I can probably make a living from this, you know, which is crazy. You know, the, you know, guys like Ariel Helwani and people like that were blowing up. And it's like, holy crap, I could like support a family on this one day, you know? So yeah, I mean, look, I'm older now, you know, I wouldn't want to be on the road just, you know, week to week to week to week to week anymore. That's just not the life I would live now, you know. Bit calmer, bit more mellow. But I do think it's not just the fact that I'm a boring old man these days. I do think there's an edge that's being lost. that, like I said earlier, you can't be the edgy, hot new thing forever.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a billion-dollar industry, you know, on ESPN. It's like you can't be the edgy rock and roll, you know.
You can't be edgy and wear a Reebok fight kit.
Isn't that the truth?
But here's the thing. I mean, isn't that kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that when you start growing, when you start becoming more corporate, when you have the originals kind of retire and the new generation grew up watching those guys and actually started training for the sport specifically, whereas everybody else was kind of a ragtag bunch who kind of got into MMA through a million different means. To me, it's pretty obvious that this generational change is also gonna mean having fewer interesting personalities just by virtue of everybody training the same sport now.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. There's definitely a uniformity and, you know, and also a lot of copycats. I mean, you know, Conor McGregor wasn't the first person to be, you know, I'm talking about his previous incarnation because now, you know, for reasons I think are obvious, he doesn't talk smack anymore. I don't think we'll ever see that Conor back ever again. I think it's pretty obvious why. But there's definitely people like, this is successful, I'm going to do that. You know, and then it takes somebody coming along who is genuinely unique and, you know, and not just in the way they train, but in terms of type of personality, like Khabib, who was a massive, massive, massive star. Too bad he's retired so early. But
well, good for him.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Good for him, you know. Like, you could be happy for the individual, but also as a fan go, oh, God, I wish he didn't, you know.
Of course.
You know, you can be happy for the individual, but sad as a fan in those situations.
You
but, yeah, like, Ollie's right, you know. There's definitely that, you know, that the sport's kind of had to grow up. You know, it's not punk rock anymore. You know, it's stadium rock.
the other thing is, when we worked with the brand, you obviously more hands on than I was, but everybody was passionate for
yeah.
Everybody was passionate to help it grow. Whereas it seems more like it's a very corporate environment now, where people don't really get hired for their expertise anymore in terms of MMA, but more for what they bring in terms of corporate functions. And it's pretty obvious that if you have less passion going in, it's going to be a less passionate product in a way.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, there was definitely a sense of, you know, when they started hiring a bunch of people, I won't like name names, you know, there's decent enough people, but there was definitely conversations I would have, you know, or sly glances I would, you know, have with, you know, a Joe Silver or someone like that going like, where were these people 5 years ago when it was hard? You know, they weren't here with us in the trenches then, were they? But now all of a sudden they're here like, oh, we've arrived to save you. I'm like, no, you've arrived because we've made it a success. Otherwise, you would have stayed at the NFL or wherever the heck you're from. You know, or, yes, you know, yeah, snowboards or some other ridiculous nonsense like that. You know, there's definitely that sense, but that again is that you've got to check yourself. Is that a real thing that any objective person would identify, or is that just, you know, my butthurt feelings?
Well,
I don't know.
Probably a little bit of both, but
probably both.
If you're being honest, the passion from the fan base doesn't seem to be where it used to be as well. It may be more successful in terms of the peaks. But people also started picking and choosing after a couple of years of having too many cards.
Yeah, there's definitely too many cards to maintain that. But, you know, the way, you know, look at WWE too, you know, the demands that people were paying, you know, enormous fortunes for live shows, they're dictating, we want more cards. So the UFC is like, okay, we can do that. Oh, you want two cards a week? We can do that too. And, I, you know, as I once said, you know, said the room, Lorenzo was there. I was like, look, as cool as this stuff is, and hardly anyone in the world thinks it's cooler than I do. As awesome as this stuff is, it's still staying home on a Saturday night. And not everyone wants to stay home on Saturday night every week for the rest of their lives.
Good point.
And that's kind of what we're asking them to do now.
Good point.
Wieder live von Ihrem Toyota-Partner mit diesem Leasing-Auftakt. Der neue Toyota Jahreshybrid. Ab 179 Euro im Monat. Ohne Anzahlung. Seine Sicherheitsassistenten laufen mit. Und ja, ab ins Netz mit voller Konnektivität. Auch am Start die Toyota Team Deutschland Sondermodelle. Ohne Anzahlung geht's in die nächste Runde. Jetzt los sprinten zu Ihrem Toyota-Partner.
Das war Teil 1 des Interviews mit Ant Evans, einem der geistigen Väter von UFC Fight Pass, dem ehemaligen UFC-PR-Chef, ein Mann, der 12 Jahre für das größte Unternehmen im Mixed Martial Arts Bereich gearbeitet hat. Und ich kann euch schon eines versprechen, Teil 2 wird länger, Teil 2 wird noch witziger, noch besser, noch spannender. Er spricht über Michael Bisping, über das Buch, das sie zusammen geschrieben haben, was Michael Bisping für ein Charakter ist, erklärt die Freundschaft zu Michael Bisping, aber auch das besondere Verhältnis zu einigen anderen spektakulären Charakteren im Bereich des MMA. Es sind Geschichten dabei zu Mark Coleman, zu Sakuraba und auch Geschichten, in denen Ant Evans auf die neue Generation des MMA eingeht, zum Beispiel über Jorge Masvidal wird da gesprochen und so weiter und so fort. Ich will nicht zu viel vorwegnehmen, also die zweite Ausgabe mit Ant Evans wird noch besser. Hört euch das Ganze an und wenn euch das Interview gefallen hat bis hier, dann hinterlasst gerne eine Rezension bei Apple Podcasts, schickt mir eure Meinung, eure Wünsche, eure Anregungen, euer Feedback. Ich bin @SebastianHackl bei Twitter und Instagram und ich freue mich immer über den Austausch mit euch. Und ja, nochmal, in wenigen Tagen gibt es den zweiten Teil. Bis dahin, bleibt mir bitte sicher, sauber und safe. So long, Hackman out.
Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-Team.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Hackmans MMA Show. Mit Sebastian Hackl. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-Team.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.